topic for today is that of carbohydrates. Carbohydrates represent that most important of all those elements that we can take into the body, all the nutrients that we can take in the five major ones. This is an important topic. It's the most common nutrient that we have, apart from water and oxygen, if you consider those nutrients. And our divine designer has spent a lot of time making quite a lot of carbohydrates. In fact, the principal work of photosynthesis, which is where we get all of our nutrients, is in the making of carbohydrates. Generally, when we eat our diet, we should take the great majority of the nutrients that we have in the form of carbohydrates. Now, there are many things that we study in health and in nutrition that may seem to us to be somewhat superfluous. That is, we're just learning things to acquire knowledge. But this should not be the objective of our learning. Our learning should be directed toward good health. That's the objective of all of our instruction on nutrition and home remedies and exercise and whatever. It is good health. Sometimes the technique sort of overshadows the objective, and instead of having that as our objective, it is almost that the acquisition of knowledge becomes the objective. But let us bear in mind always that good health is the objective. Now, if we keep that in mind, then of course we will want to avoid such things as smoking just by general principles, because smoking is way up here in those things that make for poor health, and almost everything else ranges down below that. Of course, there are drugs, and there is drink, and a lot of other bad, really bad habits of life that destroy health. Not wearing seat belts is also a very common cause of death in the age group of about 15 to 45. That's the commonest cause of death. That of automobile accidents and not wearing seat belts is involved in a large number of those deaths. So there are many things that make an objective in our study of those things that can injure us, or those things that the neglect of results in an ill effect. So wear your seat belts, avoid smoking, and avoid smokers too. Smokers are polluting the air. There are laws that are being considered now to encourage the prohibition of smoking in public areas. And I do feel this would be in the general good interests of our population to prohibit smoking. Now, as we study the Bible, we recognize that with the psalmist, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And when we study the human anatomy, we can see that our bodies represent a masterpiece of design. The human frame is worthy of our continual study. And no matter how much you may learn about anatomy and physiology, you will never exhaust it. It has been a lifetime study for me. And still, I learned things that I didn't know. Things in anatomy. Things in microscopic anatomy that I never knew before, even though that represents my specialty in medicine. New things are being discovered, and there is just far more than one person can comprehend in one short lifetime. Now, our part then becomes the part of studying. We should study the body so that we can preserve it from any kind of harm or defilement. In this very fine book called Ministry of Healing, I hope you have this book. If you don't, let me recommend that you make an investment in this book. You will not be disappointed in this book. It covers a wide variety of topics having to do with human welfare. Not only our health, but also the way that we relate ourselves to others, the way we relate ourselves to God, the way we understand religion, has to do with a lot of very fine topics. Let me read on page 271 what we find in this book on the circulation of the blood. In order to have good health, we must have good blood. That statement underlies all teaching that we could make about good health. If we talk about smoking, the reason why we don't have good health with smoking is in large measure due to the fact that smoking makes the blood impure. If we talk about not drinking enough water, in large measure, the reason why not drinking enough water is not good for the health is because of the fact that not drinking enough water encourages poor quality of blood. What we might say about such things as the use of cosmetics or clothing the body properly to have good circulation of the blood, all of this has to do with keeping the blood in a good, pure condition. Blood is the current of life. It repairs waste and nourishes the body. When supplied with the proper food elements and when cleansed and when vitalized by contact with pure air, it carries life and vigor to every part of the system. Now, let's get those three things again. Number one is when the body is supplied with proper nutrients. And I do hope you will recognize proper nutrients. Proper nutrients as compared to improper nutrients. And both of these are very important in our day, to recognize what to avoid and what to eat. Number two, that the blood be cleansed. Now, we can cleanse the blood in a number of ways. We cleanse the blood by drinking plenty of water. We also keep the blood cleansed by keeping the body clean. So the daily bath becomes a part of good, not only good hygiene, but also keeping the blood pure. So the objective of all of our health habits should be that of keeping the blood pure, keeping the circulation good. Then the third thing is that the blood should be vitalized by contact with what kind of air? Pure air. The more pure the air, the more pure the blood can be. It carries life and vigor to every part of the system. The more perfect the circulation, the better will this work be accomplished. Now, we should not hinder the circulation by tight bands. Nowhere. Not around the waist, not around the neck, the wrists, the thighs, the ankles. We should not hinder the circulation anywhere. At any point that the circulation is hindered, the heart becomes aware of that, and also the brain becomes aware of that. Then the heart must labor, and the blood vessels, too, must labor in order to push blood down through the blood vessels in that point where you have constricted it. And the brain and the heart are both aware of a constriction on the feet or around the ankles. Had you ever thought of that? And by making a constriction around the ankles, we can make the heart have to labor with greater difficulty, labor under difficult circumstances. If we have chilled extremities, the heart must labor with greater diligence. The heart becomes aware that a part of the circulation is impeded because of the fact that the blood vessels have constricted due to being chilled. You see, blood vessels are sensitive to chilling. Blood vessels are sensitive to many things. They're sensitive to the hormones in the body. They're sensitive to the neurohormones that we make from the brain. And these hormones help to make a balanced circulation. If we have chilled extremities, a neurohormone is made that closes off certain blood vessels in the extremities and opens up certain collateral or connector blood vessels, so that instead of the blood having a circulation all the way down to the end of the extremity and back up, it goes down part way and comes to a place where it's constricted, the blood vessels are constricted below it and opened in a connector, and so the blood simply goes through that connector and back up to the heart in that way without circulating fully. And so warmth and nutrients are deprived in that particular place, And also the carrying away of wastes is neglected by the blood in that area. It is a fact that we are more susceptible to viral infections when we have chilled extremities. One of the things that we can do to fulfill this objective that we have and this making of the or keeping of the blood pure is that of trying to keep our extremities nicely warm. Now, in this book, Ministry of Healing, on page 295, we find some other things that I find of great interest in relation to our subject for today. Our bodies are built up from the food we eat. There is a constant breaking down of the tissues of the body, and every moment, every organ produces waste, and this waste is repaired from our food. Each organ of the body requires its share of nutrition. The brain must be supplied with its portion. The bones, the muscles, the skin, the nerves all demand theirs. It is a wonderful process that transforms the food into blood and uses this blood to build up the varied parts of the body. But this process is going on continually, supplying with life and strength each nerve, muscle, and tissue. Have you ever considered how air and sunshine get made into blood? Did you ever think about that? Well, here is air and there is sunshine, but we need tissues. We need muscle and nerve and brain. We must have thoughts. We must have movement. We must have heat. All of these must be made up from air and sunshine. And how do we get that? Well, it is a marvelous process that we call photosynthesis. By the use of certain enzymes and chlorophyll and certain types of the gases in the air, we make carbohydrates along with water. Did you ever think about that? We cannot do that without sunshine. So we must have all of these things all put together, and they make flesh for us. This is a marvelous mechanism. It is a mysterious process. And after a lifetime of studying it, I still must call it a mysterious process. It is something we do not fully understand. It is something that was designed by a loving Creator to make it so that we could properly live in this environment which He created for us. Those foods which have been made by this marvelous process of photosynthesis should be chosen that best supply the elements needed for building up the body. Some of us work at heavy labor or do heavy sports. Some of us sit beside a desk in an air-conditioned office all day. Some of us have a blend of those two things. We sit some, and we work hard some. Determined by what kind of climate we live in, what kind of work we do, what kind of temperament we have, we should choose our food. In a hot climate, in the summertime, we would not choose heavy foods like nuts, and other heavy foods, heavy protein foods, heavy fat foods. These should not be chosen. If these are chosen, then we're going to suffer from the heat. If we sit largely behind a desk in an air-conditioned office, we should not eat a lot of food. And then that is a large total quantity of food. And then there are many different types of foods that would not be the best for heavy mental effort, such as free sugars and free fats. But if we work heavily in out-of-doors labor, we may expend 4,000 calories daily in heavy outdoor labor. If we do so, then we will need some free fats. We will need things like oils or other free fats. We may need nuts. We need heavy foods in order that we might supply the body's needs without overcrowding the digestive organs. So you see, we must choose that best supplies the elements for building up the body. In this choice, is appetite a safeguard, a safe guide? No, indeed, it isn't. Why is that? Animals use appetite as a safe guide, and animals will not eat much of that humans eat readily. You see, we have a perverted appetite. But we want to make certain that we don't cooperate with this perversion of the appetite that we have had. In fact, the perversion that we have of appetite is one of the most important things that let us know that an enemy has been at work to make our lives here on this earth not as productive as they should be. And I would like to urge you to learn why choosing our foods and what to choose as your foods to supply those elements needed for the building up of the body. Appetite is not a safe guide. You must study and learn those things. Through wrong habits of eating, the appetite has become perverted. Often it demands food that impairs health and causes weakness instead of strength. We cannot be safely guided by the customs of society. Sometimes we might think, well, what my mother did was good. My mother was from the old country, and they did thus and such, and they had a hardy race of people. But in our day, that hardiness may be lost because of sedentary habits, because of our use of certain chemicals that are no longer that are not helpful at all and make that diet no longer good for us. The disease and suffering that everywhere prevail are largely due to popular errors in regard to diet. Now, how can we know what is the very best kind of diet for us? Would you think that if you have an automobile and you went to the manufacturer and you asked the automobile what to do to make certain that that automobile ran for you in the very best way, that would be your best effort in taking care of that automobile? Well, what about the perfect machinery that we have in the form of our bodies? Should we not go to our Creator and find what He has said is that very best type of food for us? Well, let's just list those things that were given in the beginning as good foods, proper nutrients for human beings. What was one thing that you can think of? Fruits, nuts, grains, and vegetables. That's right. Now, if we have those four food groups, we concentrate on those, we should be able to say that has provided for us the very best nutrient spread that we can get. And if we list those as our principal foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and nuts, and that whatever we eat is eaten sparingly, we can feel that we have done a good job in taking care of the body. How can we make the proper choices? Number one, we can connect with heavenly agencies. Number two, we can adopt right principles. Since the care of the body is a part of that heaven wants to do for us, if we connect with heavenly agencies, we can make better choices. What are some of the heavenly agencies that we have available for us? Well, let's name those. What would you say? Angels. Angels are busy helping us to make proper choices. And those who have put themselves under the direction of heavenly agencies will have the opportunity of having a divine counselor at the side. Now, if one does not choose a good angel through the proper attitude, what can we be assured will certainly be at our elbow helping us to make a decision? An evil angel. We can be influenced by both good angels as well as evil angels. Now, in order for us to be under the influence of these evil angels, these good angels, we must surrender the will to God. And as we do, then the Spirit of the Lord is sent to us to influence our decisions. But our own surrender is necessary first. So make that surrender today. Then the second thing that we must have is that of prayer. If we pray, God can do for us that which He could not do if we didn't thus pray. So make prayer a daily companion. Have a place for prayer. We're told that Jesus would go about, as He went about, He had a certain special place that He would go. Before His crucifixion, He went to the Mount of Olives, where His accustomed place to pray was located. Then when He had gotten to what the Bible says as the place, He knelt down to pray. You remember that thing that is given to us in the Bible. Then the third thing is that of the study of God's Word and nature. In order for us to have an understanding of what heavenly agencies would have us to do, we do need to study God's Word. This can give us right principles on which to order our lives. I'd like to read a quote for you from the book Counsels on Diet and Foods, which has some important information for us that can help us to direct the kind of food choices that we make. On page 17, every careless, inattentive action, any abuse put upon the Lord's wonderful mechanism by disregarding His specified laws in the human habitation is a violation of God's law. Now, the laws that have to do with chemistry and physics and nutrition, these laws are just as much divinely inspired, divinely ordained, as are those that guide our morality. The morality that we have that has to do with lying or cheating or stealing, these are no more God's laws than are those laws that have to do with the chemistry and physics of the body. If we break God's law in the body, we have committed a sin against our bodies. And God holds us responsible for the weakness, the shallowness of our personalities and characters that results from any kind of abuse that we put on the body. There are divinely appointed rules which, if observed, will keep human beings from disease and premature death. Well, I'm thankful for these principles that we can study and know that if we follow these divinely ordained principles, we will be able to avoid disease and to encourage health in ourselves. In the book Nutrition for Vegetarians, which some of you have, you will find a chapter on carbohydrates. It's on page 33. You might like to turn there now. And let's study the subject of carbohydrates. Carbohydrates, in accordance with their name, are chemical compounds used by the body to nourish it, composed of carbon and water, or hydrate, which is the water molecule. So it's carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. This represents the most important nutrient that we can have. Some say that 80% of our daily intake of food calories should be in the form of carbohydrates. I would certainly not oppose that because of the fact that carbohydrates have such special functions for us, which we will study in just a moment. You will see on page 33 that it is the best fuel for the body. It burns the most clean. Now, if we put certain types of fuel in our automobiles, that fuel burns with waste products that can cause the engine to misfunction. We have the same kind of thing in our bodies. Certain types of fuel that we might use burns with such a dirty burning, such a dirty fire, we might say, and leaves such residues that it makes the body unclean and makes our engines misfire. if we can learn that best food to help the body do its functions properly and supply the body with that, we will have less misfunctioning of the body. What are carbohydrates? Well, they include such things as fruits, potatoes, rice, grains of all kinds, sugars and starches. These are all carbohydrates. Some people think that carbohydrates and that starches and sugars are dirty words in nutrition. If you have had that idea, don't continue with that, because we do need sugars. Sugars are important to our welfare. Refined sugar may be not the best thing for you, but there are some who can use some refined sugar with impunity. You may not be one of those. So you must study yourself and study what foods are available. And I hope that if you get one thing from our study in nutrition, that it will be that everybody is different. Some people can use one kind of diet, and some must have another. Study yourself and see what your requirements are in nutrition. If you can use a few sugars, then feel free to do so. But if you're the kind of person who should not use free sugars, then eliminate those from your diet and don't let what you cannot have or should not eat keep you from enjoying what you should have and what you can eat. That's a principle of life that will make life much more enjoyable for you if you will recognize it. Now, the various sugars have different rates of sweetness. Honey has a sweetness value from 120 to about 140. Fructose has a sweetness value from about 110 to 175. Now, this is in a comparison scale with sucrose being 100. So both of these, both honey and fructose, have more sweetness value than does sucrose, which is common table sugar. Sucrose and sorbitol and mannose all have 100 as their sweetness value. Glucose, which is grape sugar, and a lot of fruits have glucose, has a sweetness value of only 75. So they are a little less than grains have glucose. So they have much less in the way of sweetness value. Galactose and dextrins are even farther down the scale. Dextrins, as an example, have a sweetness value of 30. Starch has a sweetness value of only 5. Now, how do we get a good sweetness value from things that are mainly starch, let's say bread? If you have a sweet tooth, you might like to dextrinize your bread. Now, how would you do that? Toasting it again. Toast it a second time. Just ordinary toasting in a toaster will make it a little sweeter. But if you put it in the oven, turn the oven on at a very low temperature and let it stay for several hours. If your temperature is low enough, it can even stay overnight and not burn. But you need to know your oven before you risk a loaf of bread on it. And then, once you have discovered how to dextrinize, you may want all of your bread in that form, in the form of dried bread. Dextrinized by drying first and then lightly toasting the bread. Now, that may take a little doing on your part, but is well worth your while if you have a sweet tooth. Now, there are some people who don't have good enough teeth to chew dextrinized bread or melt the toast. If this is the case with you, then let me suggest that you take slices of bread and make thin fingers of the slices of bread and dextrinize those, and then they can be lightly sprinkled with some kind of fruit juice or with a vegetable broth or anything of this nature, and in that way softened a bit. You can get the benefits of both, the dextrinizing and the softness of it. Now, there are certain types of functions of carbohydrates in the body that you should be aware of so that you can know what food choices would be best for you in your type of work. The number one thing with carbohydrates is energy. Energy is best obtained from carbohydrates. Now, take what we might have if we are heavy day laborers, or if we are heavily engaged in sports. We may need several thousands of calories per day provided by our food. If we are a lactating mother, we may be producing 1,000 calories or more in the form of milk for the baby. This much is lost from the mother's body, and it must be obtained from some source. And the best possible source is that of carbohydrates for the production of energy. Now, the production of energy is the reverse of photosynthesis. And what is photosynthesis? It is the combination of air and sunshine in the production of food. This is photosynthesis. All food on this planet is obtained in that way. The reverse of that is the release of the sun's energy and heat, and the strength that we can get from air and sunshine in the form of heat produced by the digestion, the complete digestion of carbohydrates. A second function of carbohydrate is that of protein sparing. Now, that means that if you take a small quantity of protein, then you need to protect that so that it can function in our body processes where protein is needed. Carbohydrate can spare protein so that a very tiny amount of protein can fill all our body's requirements. There are some authorities in the field of nutrition who say we only need about 8 to 12 grams of well-selected protein in order to fill all of our day's needs. So if we have those 8 to 12 grams of protein and we eat plenty of carbohydrates so that our protein is not used to produce energy, then we spare the protein and we need very little. Now, a gram is about that quantity that would balance on your fingernails. So this can give you some idea of how much food we're talking about. 8 to 12 grams of food is not very much, is it? So well-selected protein, if all we need is 8 to 12 grams, and we get a good serving of greens of some kind, we spare that protein by the use of a lot of complex carbohydrates. Our protein needs are thereby secured, you see. Remember that point. If we eat too much in the way of proteins, then that will be used as fuel, and that will cause us to have painful joints, a burden on the liver, a burden on the kidneys, skin that will deteriorate early, and a lot of other problems. Also, an increase in the likelihood that we might get cancer. So we have all of these things involved in this matter of getting plenty of carbohydrates. The third function of carbohydrates in the body is that of assisting us with fat metabolism. If you're trying to lose weight, you will have the best possible metabolism and internal chemistry if you eat generously of carbohydrates in those calories that you are allowed. And if your carbohydrates are complexed with proteins and fats and minerals, then just to supply all of the calories that you're going to take will give you a good balance of other nutrients as well. In people who are diabetic, they find that if they don't get sufficient carbohydrate, sufficient starches and sugars in the diet, that the fats that they also get turn into ketones. Ketones make us have an acid medium in the blood. Ketones are the end products of incomplete fat metabolism. We want to avoid that. The fourth thing, carbohydrates have in the body an antitoxic effect. Now, this has two features to it. The antitoxic effect is in the blood, but the antitoxic effect is also in the gastrointestinal tract. Now, the gastrointestinal tract will furnish not only good foods, but also toxic things. Some of these toxic things are a part of foods. They have been made by plants. You're aware that some plants will make caffeine. Are you aware that some things that we consider to be good and proper foods that we could recommend for everybody, that they also make toxic substances? Take cabbage. There is a toxic substance in cabbage, toxic if we eat too much of it. Carbohydrates that we eat in other things can make it so that the toxic substances that we might find in cabbage in the form of bioluria, or in potatoes or tomatoes in the form of solanine or tomatine, that these toxic substances can be taken care of better by the body if we have a high carbohydrate intake. So bear that in mind always. Is it possible for us to completely avoid all pesticides and insecticides and preservatives and things of this nature in the modern society that we live in? The answer is no. We cannot fully avoid these things. If we have a high carbohydrate diet, the complex carbohydrates will attach to some of the poisonous substances that we accidentally take in. Then we make, and also in the process of cooking, there are made some cancer-producing agents, which we would say are toxic to the body. Some of these can be attached by carbohydrates that we take and can be taken out of the body in that way. The toxic effects of drugs and various other chemicals, additives and coloring agents, many of these can be nullified or minimized by a high carbohydrate diet. Our nerve tissues require carbohydrates, and this is the next item, which must be about item number 5. Nerve tissue requires carbohydrate for its best functioning. Now, nerve tissue is not only that goes out to the fingers and makes them move, but nerve tissue is also that makes you think, makes you able to love, makes you able to plan for the future, gives you ambition or zeal, gives you efficiency in how you do your work every day, may make it so that you can get your work done in a proper length of time. Nerve function is very important to the proper functioning of a human life. We can have better brain function if we have good carbohydrate levels in our diet. Bear that in mind as you choose your diet. Choose the proper diet for yourself. The next item is that of the laxative quality that carbohydrates have. Laxative quality is important for all of us. It's a part of our cleansing. We mentioned this as one of the objectives in taking care of the blood, that of making sure that the blood was properly cleansed. A laxative action in the bowel will make it so that we get rid of those wastes that are ordinarily the end result of the use of our foods, but it will also help us to attach certain things that are made in the blood and secreted into the bowel. Did you know that the bowel did that too? Yes, we can make toxic substances in various parts of the body. We can make toxic substances in the muscles or in the skin. And this, to some degree, can be excreted from the bloodstream into the bowel, and the bowel can get rid of it by its being attached to carbohydrates and taken out of the body in that way. This, we might say, is a mini dialysis, a small dialysis. And the body is quite capable of doing that from the foods that we eat, provided we eat the proper types of foods and we take good care that we don't overburden our bodies with things that we should know how not to eat. We make the proper food choices. Now, some of you are aware of the action of cellulose and hemicellulose and gums and pectins and other things that are what we consider to be indigestible parts of carbohydrates. These indigestible parts can be very important to the proper functioning of the bowel. They encourage the bowel to have a proper peristaltic action. The peristaltic action moves the food along in the intestinal tract and eliminates the wastes from the intestinal tract. Pectin can also have another function in the body. If a child has diarrhea, pectin can stop the diarrhea by two functions. One is the soothing quality that it has on the intestinal tract. And the second is by attaching to the toxic substances that may be located in the bowel. What medication are you very familiar with that depends on pectins? Kaopectate, that's right. The kaopectate comes, kaolin is clay from our neighboring state right over here in Georgia, near Macon, Georgia, where they have the largest kaolin mines in the whole world. And kaopectate depends on its kao part from the kaolin from right over here in our neighboring state. And then pectin comes from apples and peaches and other fruits. Berries of various kinds, and we can provide these from our foods. So if we have a baby with the diarrhea, take an apple and cut it in two, then take a spoon and scrape that and give that to the baby, and the baby will have a beneficial effect on the diarrhea. So there are many ways that we can choose our foods depending on our need. Now, carbohydrates also absorb water, and this gives bulk to the bowel. Absorbing water then helps to cleanse the bowel. It furnishes that bulk that encourages peristalsis, and it assists in the elimination of waste products from the bowel. So carbohydrates in that way are very good. As carbohydrates are absorbed into the tissues, they absorb or carry along water with it into the tissues. This makes us not look so elderly and prune-faced as we tend to get a little older because of the fact that the tissues just hold on to water if we have carbohydrates stored in the tissues. People who are thin by nature may want to get a lot of carbohydrates so that they can fill out the skin and make it look a little more plump that some people seem to feel is desirable. Now, when certain carbohydrates pass through the bowel, they tend to break down into gas and acids. So do fats as they pass through the bowel. The most favorable type of material waste that we can have in the colon is from carbohydrates. Proteins give us probably the worst. And so as we are considering the whole of nutrition, we should consider this part too. The last thing in the function of carbohydrates in the body is that of making precursor substances for a variety of cellular chemicals. These would include such things as nucleic acids. Every cell in the body, which has a nucleus, which includes almost all cells, besides red blood cells, all of these contain nucleic acids. These have as their precursor substances that of phosphosugars. Phosphosugars comprise every DNA molecule in your body. All of the pyrimidines have phosphosugars associated with them, and they are a part of the DNA molecule. Certain fatty substances of the blood, triglycerides, require carbohydrates as a part of their molecule. So we have tri, which is the three fatty acids, and glycerides. So we have the glyceride backbone and the three fatty acid radicals making triglycerides in the blood. So for this reason, if you eat largely of refined sugars, it will make your triglycerides go up in the blood, which is harmful to the heart and arteries and the heart valves, and also harmful to your thinking processes. Tends to make the thinking dull as well. Such things as enzymes and hormones and parts of cells, these are all precursored by carbohydrates in many instances. Now let's study just a little bit how we should prepare foods that are high in carbohydrates for eating. One of the important things that we must think about in the preparation of high carbohydrate foods is how much we cook them. If we're cooking fruits, we generally don't need to cook them very much because fruits can be eaten without cooking at all. They have a good flavor. They also have a good consistency, and they're easily digestible, generally speaking, without cooking. Not so with vegetables. Some vegetables can be eaten raw, but some vegetables require cooking to develop the flavor and to make them so that we can chew them properly or that we can digest them completely. What about grains? Do they require long or short cooking? How long? Several hours. In Ministry of Healing, this very fine book that we talked about in the beginning, on page 301, you will find a good section on cooking grains several hours, a good reference to that. Now, what do we find in practice and in science? We find that if we do not cook grains for several hours, that the grains do not unlock their chemical bondages to us so readily. Number two is that the starch granules are not broken down progressively as they will be if we cook them a long time. And you will see on page 37 of Nutrition for Vegetarians a starch molecule. You will see that certain enzymes can break down the starch molecules in couplets so that a glucose molecule, starch is made of long chains of glucose. And if we break those bonds, the bonds in starch, in couplets, we have maltose. And the enzymes in the saliva, as well as enzymes from the small bowel and pancreas, these enable us to break down starch in that way, by couplets. We can also break down starch through water and heat. We can also break down starch through the enzymatic activity of the Maillard reaction. The Maillard reaction is a type of chemical process that occurs during browning. That enzymatic reaction that browning is a part of breaks down starch molecules so that we can handle them much better. If we don't have some form of breaking down, such as the enzymes in the saliva and in the small bowel or from the pancreas, or long cooking by several hours of boiling on top of the stove, or by good browning action that would occur either in a grill or in the oven, if we don't have that, then we run the risk of having a food sensitivity to develop from grains. Grains are on the list of the top 10 food groups causing food sensitivities. It's important for us not to develop these if we can, because they cause the life to be miserable for people who have these kinds of sensitivities. They may get a stuffy nose, or they may get a rash, or they may get digestive problems of various kinds, or emotional or mental deficits of some kind. It's important for us not to get these kinds of problems. So we should protect ourselves from that by being very careful not to overeat on foods that are not properly browned. What foods are not properly browned that are regularly served that have a short cooking time? Waffles? How about that? Some people serve waffles when they look very pale and anemic. That should not be. When the waffles come from the waffle iron, they should look nicely tanned, as if they've been on a Florida vacation. So remember that with waffles. Don't serve any pale, anemic-looking waffles. Bread that comes from the oven should not have a pale, anemic-looking crust. It should be a nice, nicely browned crust all around, not just on the top nor just on the bottom, but all around, because the Maillard reaction doesn't penetrate great distances. The enzymes that are released through the browning reaction have a fairly short distance over which they can work. But in seconds, we have happened with the browning reaction what hours are required by heat and what lots of digestive enzymes are required from the saliva and from the small bowel and pancreas. So we either need to let the food stay long periods of time in the mouth, or we need to ensure these other things. Where does the benefit that we get from our food come? In the stomach first or in the mouth first? In the mouth. We get both satisfaction from foods and benefit from food, depending on the length of time the food spends in the mouth. So I'd like to encourage you to good chewing. That's important for us. If you chew your food well, you are not so likely to have the dumping syndrome. The dumping syndrome is that our food goes almost directly from the stomach right into the bloodstream. We don't want that kind of thing. It can give us a reactive hypoglycemia. It can also make us have a sort of wooziness. It can give us strange head noises and strange sensations in the head or in any other part of the body. So we don't want this kind of thing to occur. If it does, then we may be damaging our arteries or making it unpleasant for us to live. Chew your food well so that you will not get the hypoglycemic syndrome. Blood sugar will not rise so rapidly nor fall so precipitously if we chew the food well, if we use complex carbohydrates, and if we don't eat too much as a regular thing. Now, once in a while, a person might misjudge a little bit on how much food that he should eat, but we should not be regularly overeating. If we regularly overeat, if we regularly don't chew our food well, then we are damaging the body permanently. Some may need to have gluten-free diets. These are given in our text, and ways to promote a gluten-free diet can be learned if you have a gluten sensitivity or if you have celiac disease or some other problem that makes it so that you do not handle certain of the proteins that come from grains, such as the gluten from wheat, then you will find that choosing your food with care will pay large benefits for you. At some later time, I would like to talk with you about how certain junk foods, depending on sugar things, can cause the mind to misfunction and can even encourage our having criminal activity. A lot of very good research has been done recently, and we can profit from this research that has been done by people who have spent their lives working on this kind of thing. Let us remember that we are different from everybody else who lives, that we need to choose our food with care depending on the kind of person that we are.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you would discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.